Welcome back to the UAP Research Deep Dive with UAP Caucus.
Great to be here.
Today, we're plunging into a really fascinating new research paper. It's titled Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, UAP Orb and Rod Object Form, and Location-Centric Abundance.
Quite a mouthful, but a very important paper. Published November 2024 by Andrew Morgan and Brian Tyson.
Exactly. And it brings this, well, much-needed dose of scientific rigor to some pretty unusual observations, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It moves things forward.
So if you've ever looked beyond the, you know, the standard flying saucer idea and wondered about the more enigmatic side of UAP.
Or if you just appreciate a data-driven look at things.
Then yeah, this deep dive is definitely for you. We're going to unpack what they found, how they did it, and maybe what it all means. We'll try to keep it clear, avoid getting too bogged down in jargon.
Definitely. And what really stands out from the start is this commitment to, well, methodological research. It's something the field has often lacked, relying more on anecdotes. The authors themselves acknowledge that. They talk about the need for serious data-informed investigation, and this paper feels like a direct response. You know, even the shift from UFO to UAP reflects that push for a more objective scientific approach.
Makes sense. Okay, so let's dive into the specifics. What exactly were these researchers observing?
The paper zeroes in on two main types, orbs and rods. And a really crucial detail here is the observation method.
Ah, yes, the infrared part.
Exactly. They use the 850 nanometer infrared spectrum.
Which, for listeners maybe less familiar, is great for picking up heat signatures, right? Could be relevant if these things are energy-based or have weird propulsion.
Precisely. So in that IR spectrum, what do the orbs look like? Well, the paper says they varied in size, mostly gray and white spheres.
Okay, simple enough so far.
But yeah. Some of them have this really odd feature. They seem to be bisected by rings described as shimmering.
Shimmering rings cutting through the sphere.
Yeah, imagine like a clear ball with maybe a rapidly spinning hula hoop right through the middle. That's kind of the picture they paint for some of them in the IR footage.
Wow, okay. That's unique. And the rods, equally strange.
I'd say so. They also varied in size, but the key thing was this appearance of like a lateral extension or maybe a spiral spinning around the middle.
Spinning.
At extreme speed, they noted. Almost like a blurred spindle just shooting across the view.
A spindle. Okay.
And here's a really critical point the paper makes. Neither the orbs nor these rods looked anything like known nocturnal flyers.
Like bugs or birds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Insects, birds, bats. They filmed those two at the same location in the same IR spectrum. The orbs and rods were distinctly different morphologically.
So they could tell the difference. That's important. It suggests these are anomalous, not just misidentified moths.
That's the core argument, yeah. The visual difference is key evidence.
And they weren't seeing these from miles off, were they? The observation distance was fairly close.
That's right. Filming was done between about 5 and 50 meters away from the camera and observer and captured at 30 frames per second.
Close enough for decent detail, especially at that frame rate. Okay, let's talk location. Karajini National Park, Pilbara, Western Australia. Sounds remote.
It is. And the paper highlights why this location might be significant.
How so?
Well, they actually draw a comparison to the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah.
Really? Skinwalker, what's the connection?
Geologically, similar rock formations. Both are very isolated desert or outback regions. And interestingly, both have historical indigenous associations with, well, anomalous phenomena.
So a pattern of phenomena tied to specific similar places.
That's the idea, this location-centric aspect.
Yeah.
As if the environment itself plays a role.
Location-centric. I like that framing, tied to the land.
Exactly. And the paper mentions the surroundings too, open pit iron ore mines nearby, and naturally occurring magnetic anomalies in the wider Pilbara region.
Magnetic anomalies? Could that be connected?
It's a possibility they raise. Could these magnetic fields somehow interact with the phenomenon? Or maybe even mask it. It reminds us the environment might be a crucial piece of the puzzle.
Fascinating. So this unique location sets the stage. How did they actually study these things? Let's get into the methodology. Sounds like a strength here.
Absolutely. They used Kikul K9100 FHD digital night vision binoculars, specifically filming in that 850 millimeter IR spectrum we mentioned.
Allowing them to see in total darkness, basically.
Yeah.
Catching things invisible otherwise.
Oh, yeah. And they didn't just, you know, wander around filming randomly.
Mm-hmm.
The paper really emphasizes their standardized sampling protocols.
Okay, so it was systematic.
Very. They did multiple trips, each building on the last.
Yeah.
Trip one was mostly confirmation, are the orbs and rods actually here? And based on that, they developed stricter protocols.
Right. First confirm, then systematize. What did those later protocols look like?
Trip two involves sampling along a walking track. Every 200 meters, set up the tripod, film for 1 minute in each cardinal direction, north, south, east, west.
1 minute each way.
And they did six replicates of this along the track. Helps minimize directional bias, you know.
Makes sense. Get that 360 view at regular spots. And trips three and four, more focused.
Yeah, they shifted to single site sampling then. Trip three at one campground, trip four at another one about 30 kilometers away.
Okay.
At these spots, again, 1 minute filming in each cardinal direction. But then they repeated that whole sequence every 10 minutes for an hour. Six replicates again.
Ah, so more intensive time sampling at fixed points.
Right.
Looking for patterns over a shorter time frame.
And they did overnight sampling too. That seems crucial for seeing when these things are active.
Definitely. Trips three and five included overnight sessions. They filmed at 8 p.m., midnight, and 4 a.m.
Consistent times.
Yes. And trip five added another 8 p.m. session the next night. Same procedure. 1 minute in each direction at each time slot. This temporal sampling is key for spotting any, like, daily cycles.
Sounds pretty thorough, covering different locations, directions, times.
Yeah.
So they get all this footage. Yeah. How did they analyze it? Well, first step was meticulous download and cataloging of all those 1 minute clips. Then, using video editing software, they went through each one frame by frame.
Frame by frame. That sounds laborious.
It is, but necessary. They manually counted the orbs and rods in each segment, compiled those counts, calculated averages, graphed them for each trip. Direct observation and quantification.
So careful counting. But they didn't stop there, did they? Mentioned statistics.
Right. To see if the patterns were real or just chance, they used ANOVA analysis of variance.
Okay, the stats part.
It lets you test if the average counts differ significantly based on factors like object type or versus rod, cardinal direction, or time of night. That statistical rigor is what lifts this beyond just anecdotal reports.
Got it. Okay, so we have the what, where, and how. Now, the results. What did they actually find from all this?
Well, one of the first big findings was about direction. Across all trips, no significant difference in orb or rod counts based on which way the camera was pointing.
North, south, east, west didn't matter.
Pretty much the same abundance all around, which, as the paper suggests, really supports that location-centric idea. They weren't, you know, flying inconsistently from the north or something.
Interesting. Okay. What about comparing orbs to rods? Was one type more common?
Here it got interesting. For two of the four trips, there was a statistically significant difference. Sometimes more orbs, sometimes more rods.
Ah, so the balance shifted.
It suggests whatever process is behind these might favor one form over the other at certain times or under certain conditions. Hints at something dynamic happening.
A dynamic process.
Yeah.
Okay. And the overnight results, did they find a peak time?
Yes. For two trips, a clear pattern emerged. Numbers for both orbs and rods dropped off markedly after an early evening peak, around 8 p.m.
So busiest early evening, then quieter?
Significantly quieter by midnight, and especially by 4 a.m. That temporal pattern is a big clue, maybe tied to energy or environmental factors, like they have lights out time later on.
An early evening peak, that's specific. And the overall ratio? All trips combined, how many orbs versus rods?
Despite those fluctuations between trips, when they crunched all the numbers together, the overall ratio was surprisingly close to 1-to-1.
Really? Almost equal numbers overall.
Yeah, near parity across the whole data set, which strongly suggests some kind of fundamental link, maybe even transformation between the two forms.
A 1-to-1 ratio overall, that's quite suggestive of a connection. Now, the paper also described different types of orbs and rods, right? It wasn't just one kind of sphere, one kind of rod.
Exactly. They didn't just lump them together.
Yeah.
Based on visual characteristics in the IR, they carefully categorized four distinct types of orbs and four distinct types of rods.
Four of each, based on what differences?
Things like size, apparent color in IR, how they moved, other features, all documented with references to figures and tables in the paper.
Okay, let's try to picture these. What were some different orb types?
All right, one type. Small, gray, speckled looking, moved very erratically, almost like it was investigating its surroundings.
Investigative movement.
Okay. Another type, much larger, appeared smooth and white, moved straight, but with a distinct wobble, just transiting through.
A wobbly transit.
Then a third, medium-sized, white, but with those striking spinning rings around the middle we mentioned earlier, multi-directional movement, but not as erratic as the small gray ones, also seemed investigative.
Oh, it's with the rings.
and a fourth type, also white with rings, but this one had a really unusual arc skip motion. Not smooth flight, more like jumping in short arcs, also transiting.
Arc skip. Yeah, that sounds very non-conventional. And the rods had variations too.
They did. Four types there as well. One was small, elongated center, cone-like extensions at the ends, almost like a stretched orb, moves straight super fast.
Extreme velocity seems to be a theme.
Definitely. Another rod type, larger, shorter, wider, with symmetrical side extensions, like that spindle shape. Also extremely fast, straight line, but could make sharp turns.
There's maneuvering spindle.
Then a third. Narrower, longer spindle, maybe slightly asymmetrical, moved in shallow arcs, again, extreme velocity, could turn. And finally, a very long, very narrow rod, extensive spindle feature, moved in long, shallow arcs, extreme velocity, transiting.
So quite a taxonomy they developed there, and all moving incredibly fast, generally, which reinforces the difference from wildlife.
Absolutely. And they made that comparison explicit. As we said.
Right. They describe known flyers, too.
Yes. Four types. Moths, bats, locusts, things like that, seen in the same IR. And the key point was, these all had clear anatomical features. Wings, antenna, body segments. Things you expect.
Things the orbs and rods completely lacked.
Exactly. That fundamental morphological difference is strong evidence these UAP aren't just misidentified known creatures.
Okay. That distinction is crystal clear. So this leads into their discussion. Exploring what these things could be. It sounds like they kept it cautious, evidence-based.
Very much so. They stress that the morphological difference is a primary reason to consider them anomalous. And they note these shapes, spheres, cylinders are different from many traditional UAP reports like disks or triangles.
And they tackle the balls of light comparison.
They do. They acknowledge it, but draw important distinctions from things like ball lightning or earth lights.
What are the key differences?
Big one. These orbs rods were only seen in 850mm IR. Ball lightning, earth lights. Those are visible spectrum phenomena. Plus, differences in movement, the rod association, overall behavior. The IR-only nature suggests something different energetically.
So not just glowing plasma, necessarily, something specific to that infrared band. And they also explore the link between the orbs and rods themselves, using other research.
Yes, this is really interesting. They connect it to Massimo Teodorani's 2014 work on plasma phenomena.
Teodorani, what was his idea?
He proposed that high-energy electrons in magnetic fields could cause plasma balls to change shape. Like, from spherical to cylindrical through rapid rotation and collapse.
Ah, so a possible transformation mechanism.
Exactly. These authors speculate that maybe the orbs with the rings are spinning incredibly fast, and that intense spin could cause them to stretch out, elongate, eventually forming a rod, with the rings becoming that spindle feature due to the speed blur.
Wow, that's a concrete hypothesis connecting the two forms, and the erratic movement of some orbs fits this too.
Potentially. They suggest electrostatic forces interacting within a magnetic field could cause that kind of jumpy movement. They also mentioned Teodorani's idea about needing a central force, maybe involving atmospheric water vapor electrochemically, to kind of contain these dancing spheres initially.
So a complex interplay of energy, magnetic fields, maybe even atmospheric conditions.
It paints a picture, yeah.
Yeah.
A potential physics-based explanation, though still speculative, of course.
Of course. So wrapping up their discussion, what conclusions do they draw about possible origins? Where do they land?
They keep the possibilities broad, which is scientifically appropriate here. They suggest potential natural origins, maybe some unknown sentient or non-sentient thing interacting uniquely with the environment.
Biological, but unknown.
That's one avenue. Another is man-made advanced drones, maybe novel propulsion systems, leaving IR signatures. And then they propose multi-domain origins. This could be non-human intelligence controlling them, or maybe they're autonomous probes, or, and this is really intriguing,
go on,
that the orbs and rods we see in IR are just heat signatures, thermal traces left by a larger object that's actually hidden or cloaked, and doesn't show up fully in that spectrum.
Heat signatures of something bigger and hidden. Wow. That opens up a lot of possibilities, but bottom line, they don't know for sure.
Absolutely not. They are very clear. The exact nature, purpose, and energy source remain undetermined. This research documents them rigorously, asks the questions, but doesn't claim final answers.
Provides a foundation, but the mystery is far from solved.
Precise.
Which brings us to future research. This sounds like step one of a longer process.
Definitely. They explicitly say more analysis is needed on the existing data image analysis, motion tracking with specialized software, and getting actual field readings on site.
Like measuring magnetic fields.
Exactly. Electric and magnetic field strength readings during observations. And they hint at deploying a bigger suite of calibrated instruments for continuous long-term monitoring.
Right. Build on this foundation with more tech and sustained observation. Seems logical.
It's the way forward. This study provides a solid methodology and identifies key patterns for these IR-only UAP. More advanced tools and persistent monitoring are needed to really probe the underlying physics in nature.
Well, this has been incredibly insightful, really unpacking this paper. So for our listeners, the key takeaways. This study gives us a scientifically solid look at these unusual orbs and rods, seen only in infrared in the specific Australian location.
Highlighting their unique features, the location-centric aspect, that potential orb-rod connection.
And clearly distinguishing them from known animals or typical UAP shapes.
Right. And perhaps the biggest takeaway is showing how rigorous science, standardized methods, careful analysis, can push UAP research forward, even without having all the answers yet. It's about the process.
Absolutely. Which leaves us with a final thought to ponder. Given everything we've discussed, the IR-only visibility, the weird forms and movements, the location link, what possibilities feel most compelling to you about what these orbs and rods might be?
Are they some novel natural phenomenon, energy-based or biological, that we just don't understand yet?
Or something truly outside our current scientific frameworks?
These are the big questions this kind of careful research forces us to confront. It really highlights how much we still don't know and why continuing the theorist scientific exploration is so important.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We definitely encourage everyone to explore this topic further and stay curious about the ongoing research into UAP until our next deep dive.